Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from...
Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, Greenhorns. This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers by young farmers. Coming to you live today from Southern California, where we just concluded our Grange Revival Tour. I think 17 Granges in total, or two of them were not official Granges. And had a super fun concert dance in the Grange this weekend, and many, many workshops. I don't know. It was pretty much one of the best things in my life. Anyway, today I'm joined on the radio by Louisa Conrad from Big Picture Farm, who makes many things, including goat milk caramel. Hi, Louisa.
Hi, Severin. How are you?
I'm great. What's it like over there? How are the goats?
I'm pretty jealous here about Southern California. It was negative, or it's 8 degrees this morning, and it's still not above freezing. Or it's just been so cold for so long here. But we're making it. Spring will come.
Can we just start talking about how you decided to make caramel your part of your business? How it's like your little journey towards goats and then towards caramel?
Yeah, so my husband and I were teaching art and poetry and living in Vermont and, you know, had a garden and some chickens. And we had a gap in our teaching schedule and took an internship at Blue Ledge Farm up in Addison County, Vermont, and started making goat cheese. And I've always had a deep love for goat cheese and eaten it all my life. And we fell in love with goats, and we're just trying to figure out how to make a go of it with some goats of our own. And we found a gig at a farm in southern Vermont, Pekin Mountain Farm, and we came here to make their sheep milk cheese. And milk their sheep, and but as part of the deal, we were allowed to bring a couple goats with us, so we got a couple goats, and I just started making caramels for farmers market, and the plan was always mostly to do cheese, but the cheese room was occupied by their cheese business, so I sort of focused on the caramels first, and then that business kind of just grew, and now that's really our main concentration, but we still make a bunch of cheese and love cheese, so, yeah.
Well, and I don't know, your goat milk caramels are everywhere in the little fancy stores, and you kind of, like, got in quick and early, and now there's other people doing more. I mean, I think there's probably always been people doing super artisanal organic treats, but it feels like you got in, you had a good timing in the fancy pants organic treat category. How did you figure out that?
What?
Maybe just talk a little bit about what that was like, learning about that whole sector and how to operate in that category.
Yeah, I mean, we spent a lot of time when we were doing research for our farm in general, just in specialty food stores, checking out cheeses and all the products in specialty food stores. And so we targeted cheese stores as who we wanted to sell to. We know they appreciate high-quality dairy from happy animals that are out on pasture and respect the kind of farm that we have. So that was sort of the market that we were targeting. And, you know, Mongers are great people, and the relationships worked well.
And so what's your kind of volume of caramel, or what are your different market channels, and what kind of volume do you push through those channels?
Yeah, so we produce most heavily in the fourth quarter, and, you know, then we're making sort of 6 days a week caramel, and we don't make any cheese in the fall. We make cheese throughout the summer, and then we sort of we balance out the cheese and the caramel, so they're both kind of going half and half. And so, you know, we sell to specialty food stores across the country, but most heavily in New York and New England, for sure. It's just easier to get them there, and those are the places we sort of have the closest relationships with. Yeah, we feel really lucky for the, you know, there's just amazing stores out there that are putting out really high quality goods, and it's a fun market to be a part of.
Can we talk a little bit about the work in the art part of this? Like, again, I feel like you're such a powerful example of having figured out how to ace it in on a small scale and, like, operating with a pretty tricky, like, you're competing in that fancy category with a bunch of pet projects of a bunch of pretty fancy, sophisticated Italians. How you designed your product to be differentiated from those other players. And just especially thinking in terms of an audience of other people who are interested to develop their own businesses.
Yeah, I mean, one of our missions here at Big Picture Farm has always just been to integrate narrative, an agricultural narrative specifically, into the product and to get that back out to the customer. And that was one of the things that was attractive to Caramels, attractive about Caramels for us, is that, you know, cheese is this beautiful, pure product that I think is every bit high art sculpture in and of itself. But it doesn't, it's harder to put a story on top of it. It's just perfect as it is. And even if you design packaging for it, you know, it's normally stripped of that when it's in a cheese case anyway at a store. So we liked that Caramels, we could sort of add the story element, you know, on the packaging, on the box. You know, you could have pictures of our goats. And, you know, we invite everyone to come to our farm blog and sort of follow along. And that was really important to us. That was sort of why we were interested in doing this in the first place, is sort of telling the story of these set of animals that we live with. And I think the more you keep that intact, people really respond. They want to be a part of it, and they like following along. And, you know, I think it adds to the story, and it's also, you know, it's why we do what we do. We like storytelling, and so it's fun for us. It allows us to use skills that, you know, are totally unrelated to farming in the marketing and design and sales of the product. And so that's been really fun and rewarding. And I guess I would just add, like, I would...
Next for your farm business, where are you kind of trying to deal with next? What's coming along? Where do you see opportunity? What's the hazard? How are you thinking that also?
Yeah, so, you know, we've grown a lot pretty quickly, and, you know, growth is hard and not sustainable always at certain paces. So we're at a good size right now, we feel, herd-wise. We'll have 40 milkers this year, and that's sort of a little bit more than we initially ever intended, and I think that's a good size for us. So we'll probably try and stick at that. I think with the caramel, we'd like to just continue making it, like, the highest possible quality we can do and maintain that quality, as opposed to trying to scale it and mass produce it more, which is a tough thing to pull off because that's not the way the market demands, you know, because someone else comes in and if they make more, it's just cheaper by the nature of the way processing works. But we're committed to that, and we love making cheese in the summer. I've actually been at a cheese affinage class the last couple of days over with Peter Dixon in Westminster, Vermont, and I'm just super excited about continuing to make cheese with our milk and make the quality of that better and better. And, you know, it's we would like to incorporate the storytelling aspect of the farm more and more as well. We haven't, you know, running a farm and starting a business is such a grind, and you're working 80 hours a week all the time that you can have these wild big dreams, and I'm sure most farmers have them about all the things you're going to do. But the reality is you just have to, you know, make sure your animal's water isn't frozen and then everyone's taken care of. And so we're finally at a point where we have a little more space to imagine possibilities. So we're about to start kitting season, and I'd love to get more interactive stuff up on the web as part of kitting season this year. I don't know if it'll really happen or not, but we've been trying out some new cameras and sort of fun projects like that that can bring in people into the farm story a little bit more.
Yeah, interactive web games around milking and baby cows. I mean, baby goats. That sounds super fun.
Yeah, and webcams, and people just like seeing what's going on. The animals, and goats in particular. I mean, it's the year of the goat, and goats are so lovely and charming. And it's kind of difficult. It's backyard goats aren't necessarily the easiest animals to have. Because they do want to be where they want to be. And so, unless you're going to really invest a lot of time and energy into moving them every day to the freshest grass that they're always happy, they're tough. So it's fun to be able to let people in on that, and then they don't have to keep their own goats.
Okay, here's a curiosity point that I have. It's not related to online or interactive. It's just, a lot of people that I know who make caramels, and including myself, when I make them, they're so sticky on the outside, and then they get stuck to the wrapper, and it looks kind of amateurish. How come your caramels are not like that?
So we have a different sets of curing rooms that we keep our caramel in. As I said, I've been in an affinage class all week talking about cheese caves and humidity and temperature, and at every point of the cheese make process, there's a different ideal temperature and humidity, and the same is true for caramel. So it's an extremely finicky product, which is why it can be difficult to make at home. We have to change our recipe according to the time of year, the weather, the quality of our milk changes throughout the year based on what the goats are eating and what period of their lactation cycle they're in. So it's just a really complicated, finicky kind of product, which makes it fun and challenging, but can make it kind of a nightmare for, if you're making it at home. It probably took me around 8 months on the stovetop to get a recipe that I liked, then even to sort of work out issues at our current scale, you're just sort of always evolving.
Are you thinking about doing more or different confections, or like what other space do you see in the marketplace?
We've been messing around with a lot of chocolate-covered caramels, and that's been fun, and they're super-duper delicious. They're probably my favorite. We've also been making, turtles, or, goatlers, that I call them, and those are fun. Right now, we're not making them in a way that's efficient enough to really sell them. I mean, we do sell them, but we only can retail them. We can't wholesale them because it takes us so long to make them that our cost is pretty much what it is. But that's something we're investigating and playing with to see if we could figure out a way to make ourselves more efficient so that that could be a product we bring to market. We have lots of sort of second caramel that, I'm looking to develop a product for that, but, sort of always something like caramel popcorn. But honestly, I would be excited to, I feel like we make cheese, we make caramel, we have a huge garden. We feed everyone who lives on the farm, and expanding, sort of really being able to diversify the farm more, not on a commercial scale, but just for sort of the quality of life for everyone who's living on the mountain with us. Because it's just so hard when you start farming. You come in, you have dreams, and you're like, I want 3 pigs, I want a cow, I want, I'm going to have bees, I'm going to have an orchard, I'm going to grow strawberries, I'm going to pickle everything. And everything's expensive and time-consuming. And for us, it was really critical that we just focus on our goats and our milk and our caramel and for the first few years, and we're finally getting to a point where we can really branch out. Now we have chickens, and the pigs might come back, and as I said, the garden's there, and we planted an orchard last year, and now I want to add a lot of a big blueberry patch and raspberry patch. So there's a lot of things like that that, and I've always wanted to have a dye garden. So I'm super excited about springtime and all the things that we can plant. But again, I think those are things that'll just sort of be for those living right around us. Won't necessarily make it to market.
Well, I've just been hanging out with some tobacco people again and just talking through the hybrid economies that are part of the tobacco culture. Having a cash crop and then having a whole homestead and kind of non-monetary lifestyle, self-sustaining, and then other career mix.
Right.
And I'm really impressed how quickly you got to the point of being, just super focused and getting a really high value product out there. And, you know, we brought it down the river on the sailboat, and those people
Sold
out by they were.
That
so
was such
popular.
A cool project. I've met a few people who were on that boat at different moments.
Yeah, it was a big team. Just the Greenhorns alone, there were 15 of us who were involved.
Yeah, well, it's been cool to see how the Greenhorns has evolved. I mean, I remember you guys, you know, being really active following your blog, especially when we first started getting going 5 years ago. And, you know, I'd be curious how you feel like the young farmer movement has evolved, you know, since then, in the last, since sort of we started out. Just like there's even more young farmers now than before, or...
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I talk to a lot of people who are farming and who are kind of in your scene, like 90 hours a week, full throttle, like maybe about to pop out a baby. And I see them and they're like, oh, yeah, I used to read your blog every day back when I was, you know, an intern or trying to think about farming. And then the people who are our readership and our, you know, listenership now are again, those younger ones. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely more and more. I just don't know. I don't know how many more and more of them can feasibly enter into magic portal ways that the ones of us who are now like early 30s, mid 30s, like found the magic sweet spot of caramel, the magic sweet spot of this old barn, and the magic sweet spot of this like town that had no CSA. And so like, those magic sweet spots are, those niches are definitely limited. So one of my, you know, that's one of the areas I'm wondering about is, like, how do we change the terms of the game better to be able to actually not just be a hyper-minority of young people making it in diversified agriculture?
Right. Excuse me.
So, yeah, what else do you think we should talk about in our last 10 minutes? What do you feel like you want to pass on about the future of the present of...
Well, I guess I do think that it's really super important for people
Vermont.
To... What?
Or even just...
How do I like Vermont?
About, like, Vermont?
I still couldn't hear what part of Vermont you want.
Oh, just the latest, what's happening in Vermont.
Oh, what's happening in Vermont? Well, Vermont is very gloomy right now. I mean, it's extremely sunny, but everyone's had it. The animals have had it. All the wood piles are totally low or empty. Our barn is scarily looking like a perfect place for a barn dance and not at all. Like, it's filled with hay. And we still have probably around 2 feet of snow, so which has been there clear since the beginning of November, no break, which is very rare. Normally we get some thaw at least. But, you know, I guess that's better than no rain like California has. But I guess what I would say, I mean, one of the things that I like to tell people when I give advice is that it is super important to focus. Even if you are hoping to have, like, a tiny operation, I feel like, you know, specialization has become kind of a bad word. You know, everyone wants just, like, the fully diversified operation. And, you know, as I said, that's something we've been able to integrate back into our lives on a small personal scale. But it is, like, I feel like you have to think about a farm as a business. And, you know, you're just, if you can make one thing efficient enough that you can bring it to market at a price that's attractive, then that's going to really help you, you know, live the quality of life you want with the rest of the elements of the farm. And I feel like, you know, it's not as romantic a path, but it, I feel like it can get you to the place that a lot of people want to be. So I guess that would be my advice to folks out there in my very limited amount of experience. But, yeah, and I guess, I mean, also just back to the art and farming element, I think that I'm really inspired by how many artists there are that are farming. I'd love to see more. Everybody's so busy, but just it'd be interesting, you know, just even the goat farmers in Vermont that are artists is kind of incredible. You go to so many different goat farmers' houses, and there's these, like, beautiful paintings in them that the artist, that the person who's also making the cheese made. So I think it's pretty cool. Yeah, what do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about moving out of monoculture. And I want to talk about all the people who are going to be taking on land that's polluted and destroyed. Because I feel like so much of the good progress that we see now and the really awesome farms are made possible by special suite situations and dealing with land that's been abandoned and under kind of underutilized in, you know, two little mountain places or sheltered in some other way. And I'm interested in confronting the land that has been in, you know, maximum production world and commodity world and is needing major land restoration and how to format the approach to that problem. But
yeah, I mean, that's, like, just different in Vermont. Vermont doesn't have as much of that land. I mean, I'd say, like, for us, it's, like, we have a rocky landscape. We live on a rocky, ledgy mountain. And what's cool about Vermont right now is there's a lot of these small hillside farms that were pretty popular in the 1800s. And they're all, you know, they're coming back here and there because they were abandoned in favor of the, you know, when all the cow dairies kind of consolidated and became a little bigger. Everybody moved off the hills, but now you're seeing, like, little smaller operations. There's Plowgate Creamery just put out their butter to market, Marissa, up in Westfield. It's super delicious. It's a sort of hillside farm up in Waitsfield, Vermont. It's incredible. So just, you know, in Vermont, I feel like it's just sort of reclaiming the Patchy Hills landscape, which is just the smaller operations, and that's been really, really fun to see.
Well, and what I heard from Applegate, I really like that lady, by the way. What's her name?
From where?
Not Applegate. Plowgate.
Marissa.
She said that on the farm that they are now on, they were the winning bid, that there were, like, 35 people bidding on that land.
Yeah. Yeah, the Vermont Land Trust does great things.
Okay, I have to wrap it up. I think we should talk in person sometime because I feel like there's a nice philosophical come that can happen. My job is to announce to everyone that they should turn on to all of the 4 collections of music that we now have produced, especially around the Grange. So we have a Grange Future album that's coming out on vinyl in only 4 weeks. And then we also have a bunch of songs, work songs and songs from around the world, agrarian songs. All that is part of the broader almanac effort. We've sold already 2,000 copies of our 2015 almanac, and I hope we sell out so we can print more and keep it up. And the other thing I need to announce is not much. That's all I need to announce. Do you have any announcements in your bioregion or classes you might be teaching?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Nope, just everyone. Hope everyone has a great spring. And if they want to follow along, we're at Big Picture Farm. We're on Instagram, Facebook, all the fun places.
Happy spring. Eat more caramels. Thank you,
yeah.
Everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Happy spring.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.